O'Hare. Coventry couldn't snatch it, could they? Sims, right! They've done it! Absolutely sensational! Hadji Wright has sent Coventry City into the semi-finals in the most dramatic fashion!
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
All rested after our week off. Oh, what a lovely week off we had. I'm sure you missed us. Yeah, I'm sure you were sat there listening to absolutely nothing on Wednesday morning or wherever you listen to the podcast. But, you know, we need a break. And we are now in the running now to the end of the season. And this weekend we had the FA Cup quarterfinals, and they were a load of entertainment. We could just do the whole podcast about any one of those quarterfinals. Well, except the City one. That was a bit yawny. But all the other ones were just amazing. And in fact, our box set this weekend had three quarterfinals, the three ones that you wanted to watch, but also had loads of other great games in it as well, because, of course, it has great games in it every week because it's the seven great games to take you from Friday to Sunday. Exactly what it says on the tin. But this week, I don't know, this may be the first time it's ever happened, but in every game, at least one side scored three goals. It's amazing, isn't it, Jan?
That is. I mean, well, it's Graham, it's down to you for picking them. It's you should receive all the plaudits for that.
Well, yeah, but a lot of the time I'm picking them because I know that they're ones that you guys and me can quickly write a 200-word preview for. I mean, that also goes into the process of picking them. Isn't that right, Terry?
That's completely right. That is why Stuttgart keeps coming up in the box set.
Hey, Stuttgart have only been in the box set four times, I think, this season. And they deserve to be because they're on fire. And they almost went down last season.
I know. They were in a playoff with Hamburg last season.
Yeah.
But people said, this, like, the Stuttgart team's so good. Why are they so rubbish? And then the following season, they were like, oh, right, no, here we go. This Stuttgart team is so good. And there's nothing to add to that sentence because it is.
Interestingly, I did see one of these pan-European XG charts from last season, and it was XG against actual goals. And Stuttgart's was clear outside of where they should be. It was like a completely freak that they did as badly as they did last season. And obviously something clicked, and this is perhaps a fairer reflection of the sort of team that they are. Sometimes the league table does lie, maybe.
Yeah, it just takes so long sometimes for players' confidence to restore themselves because they've so many difficult seasons, Stuttgart, that when they finally did get good, they had trouble convincing themselves that they were actually good, you know, as opposed to expected good.
Yeah, see, this is how it goes, listeners. You see, this is how Stuttgart do end up in the box set, is because Terry can start rattling on about opinions about them, when really we should be talking about the FA Cup quarterfinal, shouldn't we, Jan? Because they were brilliant, weren't they?
They were excellent. I think we all got something out of them. Obviously, there were two thrillers. Leicester got knocked out, which Terry will be happy about. For some reason that no one can quite work out, but there you go. And obviously, the Dirty Mags are no more in the competition anymore. There's no more Dirty Mags. But, I mean, City were a little lucky on that. I mean, Silva got two goals, but they were both deflections. But, you know, Newcastle's out, so what do we care? But the game I covered for the box set, which was Wolves versus Coventry, which looks like it passed without incident off the pitch, unlike the last West Midlands derby, was a cracker because Wolves were winning 2-1. The commentator on the feed that I saw even said, that's it, Wolves have won it at 2-1. And little did he know what was going to happen, because then Coventry just pulled it out of the bag and ended up winning 3-2 in an absolute shock. I'd say that is shock of the round, although the United-Liverpool game was a fine display. But for Coventry to actually get to Wembley even though you shouldn't really play your semi-finals at Wembley. I think we're all agreed on that. But anyway, they do get to have their day at Wembley, where they failed to win in the playoff final earlier in the year. So hopefully they'll exercise some demons there. I don't think they're going to, because they're playing Manchester United, who did very, very well yesterday. A former Sunderland loanee, Amad Diallo, scored the winner. When he was at Sunderland, he was an absolute megastar, and he's a club legend already, even though he'll never play for us again in one season. So hopefully that young man's now arrived on the Manchester United platform, and he's going to be playing more because he's an absolute gem.
Yeah, and another former Sunderland man, Ellis Sims, had a great weekend as well, didn't he?
Yes, he got two for Coventry, although one was with his arm, and it did take VAR 4.5 minutes to decide whether it hit his arm, which it did. But I think, given it was the upper part of the arm, I'm not going to go into it because everyone have seen it by now. It stood, and obviously it was one of the goals that helped Coventry go through. But yeah, he did very well. He did very well.
Yeah, it was one of those T-shirt line things. In the old days, it probably would have been allowed to stand, but I suppose now that we have to have consistency everywhere, you know, you've got to have these rules down. But like, let's not start talking about handball, VAR and nonsense like that, because there's enough football to be talking about. But actually, no, we're not going to be talking about football, because you know, this is the sound of football. You know, you don't turn up here to listen to us talking about how great certain matches were, even if nearly all the goals were deflected. I mean, there was a couple of deflections in the Man U Liverpool game as well, wasn't there?
Yep, two Liverpool goals. Yeah, were deflected, weren't they?
Now, the big news today on Monday, as we record, was that Forest have been hit with a 4-point deduction. Yeah, do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so Forest, when they came up in May of 2022, indulged in what can only be described as an absolute spend fest. They went crazy with the credit card and spent £250 million on players, which for a club that's just come up from the Championship, a great tradition behind them, a big support and great ambition. But obviously, they're never going to be recouping that kind of expenditure with their turnover. So in line with what the Premier League have been doing and have done already with Everton, they investigated Forest because they breached the profitability and sustainability rules by a lesser amount because they spent fewer years in the Premier League. Part of the time was in the Championship. Anyway, they got them banked to rights and they've been deducted 4 points as of today, which puts them into the relegation drop zone.
Does indeed. It puts them a point behind Luton. Yeah, Luton are currently sitting in between the teams that have been deducted points. All right, we're going to go into this in a bit more depth and about the whys and wherefores of point deductions for clubs. But Terry, is this an unfair sanction for Forest? Or, well, they knew the rules, now they're having to pay the price for it.
I think it's both, Graham.
Ah, good. There's plenty of discussion then to be had.
It's never one thing, is it?
No.
It's never, ever one thing.
Never,
one
ever.
Thing that we've learned about 21st century is never, ever, ever one thing. There are no absolutes in football and there are no absolutes in life. The law is the law. Those are the laws. And if indeed they have broken the laws, and I think what we do know is that we have to wait for the appeal, really, don't we? Because there will be an appeal.
Yeah.
And I would probably suggest that there will probably come down an appeal because, like, that's genuinely how this stuff works, isn't it? They set it as such a thing and then there's an appeal. I don't know. Maybe not. It might well be able to say, yeah, no, this is a fair punishment and that's fine. I would imagine that the club would have known that there's a good chance that this was going to happen and that they would just took the chance and went for it anyway, or felt that they didn't really have any choice but to go on this spending spree, this spenderama, and hope for the best and see if it works out. They've kind of got their just desserts, but at the same time, it does illustrate just what needs to be done, what clubs now need to do in order to have a chance of staying in the Premier League. And that would appear that they have to break the rules if they're going to have a chance of staying in the Premier League, because the teams that don't break the rules don't seem to be able to have much of a chance of staying up. At least that's what it's looking like anyway.
Yeah, Terry's raised a really good point there, Jan, because you've got to look at the fact that the teams below Forest, even with a point deduction, Burnley and Sheffield United. These are the sides that came up automatically last season. Now, your team, Sunderland, were playing in that same division with them last season. So you knew how good they were and how much better they were than anyone else. Burnley got 101 points last season. Have you been surprised at how bad those two sides have been this season?
I was very surprised how bad Burnley have performed this season, given how dominant they were. Burnley won it by a country mile, but the pair of them last season were, you know, there was clear blue sky between them and everybody else, wasn't there? Burnley were definitely the dominant of the two last season, and I thought they would come into it and do all right, actually. But they've really failed to perform and impact the division in any way whatsoever, really. So I think they have to accept that they are relegated. Though you never know at the moment, do you? Because we don't know what else is coming for Everton and others like, well, I think there's only Everton, isn't there, to worry about with another potential deduction. But Sheffield United, I didn't necessarily think they would do so well, but I was so impressed with Burnley that I thought they would have more of an impact, really.
So, Terry, do you think now that we know Everton's punishment and now we know Forest's punishment, some bright spark out there is going to be getting your spreadsheet out and saying, right, okay, they got 6 points for this much. Forest got 4 points for this much. Therefore, we can plot on a graph how much, if you overspend, how many points you're going to be deducted. So with my maths brain on, I'd be thinking, right, okay, well, actually, we can overspend by this much and take a 4 or 5 point hit. Can we spend money to get more points, those 4 or 5 points and some more, and then maybe take the hit and then stay up?
Yes, that has to be the way forward for a lot of clubs. They will look at that and say, well, now we've got some kind of test case now. I guess it's like an overdraft, isn't it? It's like a points overdraft.
Yeah.
You think, well, we'll take the hit for this. So we want to qualify for the Champions League. We want to spend 250, 300 million pounds to do that. That's money that we, in theory, don't have, although we do have it, but we don't have it. According to financial sustainability rules, we don't have this money. But according to our owner's bank balance, we do have this money.
It's right here, look.
So he's right here, look, literally here. Here is the money, right here. John Textor, one of the co-partners of Crystal Palace, was talking about this in a recent thing. Which got a degree of coverage. And he said, yes, you know, Crystal Palace don't have the money to make a push for, you know, a European place to spend to go this far up the table. But they do, because, like, I'm a billionaire. so I could spend that money and do that. Now, I suspect he was talking through his hat a lot of it. I don't know whether or not he actually would put his money where his mouth is. I don't know how welcome that would be by the club. But the fact remains is that there are clubs that could have access to money, but know that there's a sort of drag back because the actual earning potential of the club that they have is like a club like Crystal Palace, maximum capacity, what, 27,000? Maybe if they ever rebuild this stadium, it will go up to about 35,000. There's only so much income that they can generate. The rest of it has to come from outside sources, and it has to be within the rules. I was about to say legal. That's not right. Within the rules laid out by the Premier League and by UEFA as well, if it comes to that. And if they go outside of that, then yeah, they then have to then plot a course and say, well, how many points are we going to lose? Is that going to be enough for us to still achieve our goal? And then, of course, you know, if the answer is yes, then they go ahead and do it. And of course, if the punishment is more severe, well, then they've now got precedent. So they go back to the Court of Arbitration for Sport and say, look here, this is what we spent. This is how much they got punished by. Why are they punishing us more? And the next thing you know, you're deciding league table positions at the end of the league season. And we all know where that ends.
Mm.
It ends in Formula One. It ends in sports that aren't sports. You might as well be watching synchronized swimming. Just a bunch of suits, you know, at the side of the pitch holding up cards saying what's what.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that observation because I would definitely put motor racing in with sports like that because it's dreadful.
Yeah, you'd chuck it in the pool, wouldn't you?
I would make them drive it into the pool. I'd probably evacuate the synchronized swimmers and just chuck in everybody who watches Formula One because they're equally insufferable.
Apart from Ed. Ed's great,
yeah.
Long time listener, occasional guest, Ed.
Sorry, Ed. I'm not sorry.
No. Well, actually, no. Anyone who enjoys watching cycling, yeah, they can get in the pool.
They can get in there as well. Yeah.
No, guys, come on. Don't do this to me.
Horse racing, get in the pool.
Yeah, horse racing can definitely get in the
not
pool.
Not dog racing, though. Not dog racing.
Oh, this is your exception, is it? Yeah,
hang on a second.
We finally found it.
Most forms of racing can get in the pool, apart from cycling and dog racing.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Well, I'm glad we had this discussion, and I'm glad we've got it on air, so everyone knows now, from now on, the levels of racing that we can actually talk about. Okay, well, let's get back to the subject. So now that we have the framework by which teams can play the system, is this the only option left for them? As you said, yeah, and then Burnley and Sheffield United, who haven't had any, as we know, so far, problems with the amount of money they've spent. So they're there playing within the rules and they're getting absolutely humped every week. What about the teams coming up? Are they going to be saying, right, okay, well, let's not be like them. We can't play like Luton because we can't do that cup final every week thing. And it's not even working for Luton. If the teams around them hadn't been deducted points, they'd be 3 points short after having an amazing season. But yeah, 22 points after 29 games is not going to be enough to keep you up. They're going to stay up by default, I think, this season, because I think at least one of Everton or Forest is going down. But what do you think the plan is for next season? What's Leicester's plan next season? As long as they don't get hit.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Graham, because Leicester I think this is yet to play out, but it's already circulating in the press that Leicester are being investigated by the Premier League for similar reasons that Forest and Everton have been sanctioned for. And they could well start next season, should they be promoted, which looks a lot like they're going to be, on a negative points score. So, you know, that's already going to hit them. So they're going to really struggle. And to make up for that, then they're going to have to spend more money because they've been competing in the championship. So they're going to have to, you know, get back all the talent that they had to get rid of. And then you got Leeds and I think Ipswich are going to come up as well. They're all three of them are separated by 1 point in the top three. And Ipswich are doing very well. But Leeds could probably go into the bank manager and say, we're Leeds United, can we have some money, please? Because they're Leeds United. But then again, Leeds have got form in this, haven't they? Because they've spent lots of money before and plummeted down through the divisions. Ipswich, you know, again, great former club, doing well now, but how are they going to hope to compete with the big boys? I think that all three of those, well, if it does come to pass that Leicester are deducted points, that's going to be a really tough ship to turn around, isn't it? The other two, I just think that they're going to really, really struggle. Leeds maybe might do better than Ipswich, but I think Ipswich are going to find it hard. You know, as a fan of a club that's in the Championship, all right, I'm not really enjoying this season too much for reasons we've already gone into across this entire season. But in the Championship, you get a couple of games a week. It's really tight and competitive, and it's on the telly all the time. It's brilliant. In the Premier League, unless you support a team that's in the top six to say to top 10, you really feel like you're up against it every week because the gulf between the sides that can stay in there and those that as we can see, aren't is so great that I can't. I mean, if Sunderland got promoted, they're not going to, but let's say in a magical world where everything gets turned around and we get promoted through the playoffs, I mean, that would just be an awful season to look forward to next season. You'd have the brief kind of surge of joy and happiness that you've been promoted, but then the realization sets in that you're going to be in for a god-awful season where you're going to get battered every single week by teams that have spent hundreds of millions of pounds on their squads. And how do you keep up? How do you keep up unless you do what Terry suggested, where you kind of go, well, there has to be a number that we can go to, where we can spend to keep us up, and just take a hit on the points and then we do stay up, which makes a mockery of the whole thing, really, doesn't it? You need a different set of rules and metrics if this is going to continue.
Well, yeah, you do, or a different way of playing. Terry, is the only solution for clubs coming up to take the Luton model and basically treat every match as trench warfare?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I thought Luton are particularly designed well for that task. I think culturally that's the way the club is at. They're a tiny club with a tiny stadium. I know that they've got big ambitions and look forward to the new stadium and where it takes them. But, you know, the clubs like Luton can go in there with that mentality. The difficulty with, say, Sunderland or Leeds is that traditional clubs historically worth quite a lot of money, big support, then the kind of support and that you can take to the bank and maybe get a little bit of money, leverage a little bit of extra cash out of. But really, they would find themselves struggling once again, which is, I mean, that shouldn't be. I mean, I can sit down and patiently explain it to me and all the numbers, and anyone who knows me knows, although that it wouldn't make any difference anyway. I mean, it's just like, I don't understand numbers. I literally don't understand numbers. But I understand that there is a process, even if I don't understand the process. But what is not for me, what is not right, is that historically big clubs with large supports, national supports, oftentimes international supports, can't compete in the Premier League because they haven't got any money. And even if they did have money, they wouldn't be able to spend it. This just doesn't feel like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And it suggests that that system is broken and is failing, and it shouldn't be right. I don't know what the solution is. I'm pretty certain that the solution isn't token solidarity payments, although I think that that would probably help. Well, I do know what the solution is. It's 50 plus one. But I mean, I don't know what the solution for the Premier League is in order to get themselves out of what appears to be now an inbuilt imbalance. So Jan's scenario, Leicester going up, who are a traditional club, yes, but I would suggest you historically a kind of mid-table club. Yeah, maybe a bit of a grey mouse. Sorry, Leicester. I know I don't like you, but I'm sorry anyway for that. Brilliant recent history, amazing rich tradition in recent times, but not necessarily a big club. And you've got Leeds, who are historically a big club and have come through. And then you've got Ipswich, who had those Robson years, but actually you would suggest are a relatively small club. Again, just because I don't live in Suffolk, so I can say something like that. But, you know, which of those three, if those three all three goes up, who's in for the best season out of those three? I would suggest you it will probably be Ipswich, because they will like go, well, we know we're relegated before we're going down. So let's just like get stuck in, enjoy it, adopt that siege mentality, and hope we don't get cut to ribbons too much. It'll be the other two clubs that really could end up struggling. Leicester, because they could end up with a points deduction, and Leeds, because frankly, they can't spend the money that they might be able to leverage in order to do so. And you know, for me, you've got three different scenarios, three different football clubs, but it's all ending in one thing, and that's relegation. And that doesn't feel like that's how sport should work.
Hmm. You mentioned solidarity payments, and now this week the Premier League and their discussion with the EFL broke down with the amount of support payments they were going to pay the EFL. And this is all a government-backed initiative to force the Premier League's arm to go along with the football bill that is due to be read today when this podcast comes out. So I understand this is going to be fast-tracked because these talks about solidarity payments have broken down. But is the new bill going to make any difference to this? Or are we just going to see, the more the government pushes for regulation, are we going to see the Premier League putting up the barriers and saying, no, we're going to fight this all the way, we'll take you to court and point out how unfair all this all is? Well, it's not really unfair, they just have very, very, very expensive lawyers. So is this what we're looking at now? Is there going to be an occasion now where the Premier League is going to say, well, look, if you don't like coming up and being crap, fine, we'll just pull up the drawbridge and the Premier League wouldn't just sit in its own little bubble. The EFL can just happily play amongst itself and win the traditional old trophy, and we'll be playing our games wherever. What's going to happen? Jan, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't think that that's as outlandish as people might think, because the Premier League is like any industry. It's an industry within an industry. It's an industry within football, the Premier League, isn't it? Because it's very much standalone, and I think that's the way they want to keep it. But from the limited reading I've been doing, is that the Premier League head honchos and people involved in that are very much against doing any kind of, certainly the most recent deal that came out, I think half of the clubs rejected the new deal that was come up with. The government have been saying for some time, if you don't sort it, we will sort it. We want this to be sorted before the regulator comes in. But it looks like a regulator, potentially, if this doesn't get sorted soon, is going to come in and have to become very unpopular very, very quickly. And that could get backs of certain fans up straight away and upset the Premier League, and they make, when there's that much money at stake, then people will do, or organisations will do everything they can. So as you mentioned, they might drag it through the courts. They might make things increasingly difficult in other ways, or they could, you're right, pull up the drawbridge. The potential there as well is that they go one step further and go, well, look, we realise we made a mistake when we talked about the European Super League. However, our hand's been forced here. You know, we've got revenues that we can tap into that we just can't do it anymore because of all the red tape and things like that that is going on. So therefore, you know, we're going to knock back on the door of Juventus and the two big Spanish clubs, and maybe we'll go and do it ourselves. I am extrapolating that to the nth degree. I get that. This is not going to happen this week. But, you know, you just look at what the potential that they could do. They could do this, and who's going to stop them? The Johnson government threatened to throw the law at them over the European Super League. But the reality is these are businesses that can choose to trade in whichever way they want. So, I mean, if they wanted to, they could appeal against that right the way up to, you know, whatever the European Supreme Court or whatever the highest court is that would hear this kind of thing. But it could certainly happen. And I think that unless we fix this properly, then it could happen. And to be honest with you, if the Premier League want to pull up the drawbridge and fuck off, then they can fuck right off as far as I'm concerned, right? Because football is dying outside of the Premier League, and it's because the Premier League have become very, very good at what they've done. And well done, lads. But, you know, it's going to, you know, end up eating yourselves in the end if you don't come to some kind of deal here, because these clubs, we've seen it already, are going to start dying out. When clubs start dying out, it has more deeper societal problems that become much bigger than us just talking about football.
Terry?
I think the idea of pulling up the drawbridge and making the Premier League a franchise-only affair, I don't think that is outlandish in the eyes of many people in the Premier League. I think it's something that is rarely discussed, probably. And I would certainly suggest it's never anything that is officially discussed. But I'd certainly think that the Premier League would look at the NFL, NBA, any of the big American franchises, the NRL in Australia, for example, and other examples, and think, you know, even the Rugby League Super League over here in the UK. I mean, they would look at that and say, well, these things can be done. So we can do them. and we're football. We're bigger than all of that. So if they can do it and make it work, then we could definitely make it work. It really, at that point, then becomes a question of, you know, who do you invite? Who do you want in your league? And how do you get it past the regulator, and to the fans? You get it past the regulator by nosing the whole thing up as much as possible, in the hope the government lose interest, or more likely a new government comes in and can't be arsed with it. And I think we've talked about this in the past. I think that there's a good possibility that Labour will not be arsed with the football regulator, because they will have a whole shit ton of stuff that they want to get on the statute books over the space of the term, and they're just not going to be doing with it. They're going to be looking at, frankly, far more important things, immediate things. And I acknowledge Jan's point about the societal importance of football. Absolutely. But I would suggest that there is huge immediate concerns that need to be addressed by a new government, of which a football regulator, I think he was quite low. So it could lose the parliamentary time unless it finds its way onto the statute books before the summer recess at the absolute maximum. I think after that, that's it. It's fucked. So I think that there's a good chance that that's part of their play as well. Cause as much of a stir as possible, make things as messy as you possibly can in the hope that it all gets delayed. How do you get it past the fans? Well, you go to war with someone, you know, not in a literal sense. You set up how do the City fans, why are the City fans with Manchester City when they really should be looking at City and going, how on earth have you managed to get us into this mess with these 115 charges? So you set it up as though, like, you know, everyone's against us, you know, this is a plot against us. You know what we should do? We should fuck off and leave those guys to it. Let's fuck off and leave those guys to it. And I think you'll persuade enough of them to be able to go along with that if they feel that there's riches in store. But there might be some clubs that maybe culturally are against that. But this isn't Germany. In England at the moment, I think that is an argument. I think over time, and if you handle it well, then you could win that. These guys would have no problem whatsoever with hosting matches, Premier League matches overseas, going to the United States, going to Vegas, playing some games, doing the whole game 39 thing, reviving that. They're well capable of it, I think. And all it takes is probably one something to happen to set that off. And I don't think it's even remotely outlandish. And it's something that football fans, if they really want to protect that, then they should go for it. But you will ever know, Graham, I think that there's a distinct possibility that there'll be, if you like, authentic legacy fans who might just think, you know what, you guys should just leave because you're stinking the place out, and then just leave it for us to just like figure out the rest of it.
Yeah. Personally, I think the whole football regulator thing is trying to be set up as a bogeyman for the Premier League, and I think they can see through it immediately. I think that those people there are looking at it and say, well, who are we comparing this regulator to? Because if you're looking at the energy companies, or if you're looking at the water companies, these are all operating on licenses from the government. Premier League clubs aren't. They don't have to tender for being the water supplier for the southeast of England or something like that. These are football clubs. And for me, I can't see how this new regulator is going to have the powers that it suggests it is going to have. And I think that is going to be one thing that's going to turn fans against it, because I think as soon as one club goes bust with the new regulator in charge, then that's it. Everyone's going to lose faith in it. And you've seen what one club, Man City, have done with these charges. What are 20 clubs going to do against the football regulator? This is another one of those fag packet policies that the government's come up with. Plays really well. I mean, it was a populist idea that came through in the Johnson government, and it's one that stuck around, even though it's not really fitting with the Sunak government, but seems to play well with the Hicks. Yeah, it's going to go through, but God knows what power it's going to have. It's not going to have any power.
No. The proper regulator for football is the Football Association.
Yes.
And if it's not the FA, it's UEFA. And if it's not UEFA, it's FIFA. Yeah. The structure is there. It just is powerless. For introducing a new element into this is just going to make things worse. I hate to say it, because I think that actually I hear people's arguments for the regulator, and I agree with them. But what I want to see is the existing regulators use more power and show more power.
Yeah.
And actually regulate the game. That's what I really want to see. I think one that, as you say, one that's by a bunch of coked up Tories is not going to be a good idea. It will not be a good idea. And I'm sorry. And I realize that's a partisan remark to make. But I do think that any party that's at the fag end of its time in government is not going to come up with decent legislation. And it doesn't matter what it is. That's why it's usually a good idea for these guys to go by this point, because they're not serving the interests of the country. And football will not be served, I think, I'm afraid to say, at this point by this. I think what needed to have happened was more laws to give the FA perhaps more authority, or if not that, then make them exercise their authority. That, I think, is something that could be done. But none of that's happened.
I wonder how a new regulator is going to be when it only applies to the UK clubs. Because you're right, Terry, it needs to be something that's run at least at UEFA's level, really, doesn't it? Because then it's applying those rules right the way across it, not just on these islands. It doesn't make sense that you've got differences of that level that only exist in the UK when football's bigger than just the UK. I think you just need a broader stroke if you're going to look at how you're going to regulate this properly.
Well, usually I sign off on the podcast with what's going to happen this weekend. Just to lift you up at the end of a podcast, because sometimes we get a bit gritty, a bit angry. And so just to leave you on a happy note, to look forward to something because there's football on. But of course, it's an international break this weekend. And we don't do box sets on international breaks because we just don't. Okay, especially when it's full of friendlies. But friendlies are a bit of a rarity now, aren't they, lads? Because we don't play as many now anymore. And we used to get about half a dozen a year. And now it's only about two a year now. I think we only had one last year, if you don't count the one we had against Scotland, because that was like a centenary match. So, yeah. Are we missing friendlies?
Not at all. No. No. Not in the slightest. No.
Okay.
So not even. We're playing Brazil, aren't we?
We are, yes. Brazil and Belgium.
Well, the best thing about that is that the Belgium will be sporting their new away kit, which is a replica of Tintin.
Yes.
Which is tremendous. It's absolutely tremendous. They unveiled it in the Hergé Museum in Brussels.
More of this thing.
We need more of that. And that's why football is so great, because it can do stuff like that.
Yes.
Just to provide a bit of an uplift.
Yes.
Football is still brilliant. It's still brilliant.
Yes. Just, Yeah, a regulator is not going to do that for you. That's something that football has to do. And football, you know, it has a lot of problems, a hell of a lot of problems. But sometimes it comes up with really fun stuff like that, and we should all applaud that. But hey, don't let me stop you from signing up to the Weekend Boxer, even though it's not going to be here, because there will be one in 2 weeks' time. So you can sign up. You go to the website, you go to click on the link for the Weekend Boxer, and there's just a little box for your email, and you can subscribe to it. And it will be in your email a week on Friday.
And the bi-seasonal shit fest that is the Classica will be in the box set, I hope.
It will be.
Or maybe not. Maybe you'll drop it, Graham.
Do you know what, Terry? A little fact about this. Do you know what the most common game is in the 250-odd editions of the box set is?
Is it Der Klassiker?
Yes! Yes, it is!
And how many of those are with the opening line of, this is not a Klassiker?
I think pretty much all 14 probably have that in there somewhere. Yeah, there's a load of fixtures there that have been in there 14 times, and this is going to be the first one that's been in there 15. I think you've got things like Arsenal, Tottenham, City, Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool maybe as well. All of those games have been in there 14 times. And I think this one is the first one to get up to 15.
Massively on brand for the Sound of Football, isn't it, to be fair?
Hugely.
And a huge testimony to me droning on incessantly about the Bundesliga. This is a good day for me.
Maybe I'll collect them all together and put them on in a big anthology.
We have insiders. We have a man at the Bundesliga coverage, and it wouldn't it be great if he was able to strong arm the commentator into mentioning that as a stat during the call? I suspect that will not happen. But but you know who you are, and if you can make it happen, then well, yeah, it'll just be amazing.
Yes, let's not use his real name. Let's just refer to him as John. And
No, that's a little bit too on the nose. Why don't we call him Hartley?
See, I put an H in his name there. So I thought I'd got away with it completely. Yes. Well, maybe I'll put them all together in an anthology and put that out this week, and so you can read all 14 of the previous ones of Terry droning on about this isn't a classic.
I know you've done at least one. Graham.
I think I probably have, where I probably said pretty much the same thing as
Yeah, you said the classic was for tourists.
Which is true. So even though there won't be a box set this weekend, there might be something for you to read anyway. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Devlin, it's goodbye.
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 We are at Sound of Football on X, Blue Sky and Instagram, so feel free to get in touch there or head to our website, sofpodcast.com. Don't forget to rate and review us.
The Lumberjack shirt returns for the second pod in a row.
Oh, really? That's a bit of a faux pas. I feel as if I've committed a minor faux pas.
Starting to make me wonder whether you're not actually here and Graham spun up some kind of AI thing.
I'm an extremely bad AI representation of myself.